Comedy Fix podcast. My name is Jamie. I'm here with my co-host Sam and Chris. And today we're talking about training centers, the good, the bad, the ugly, the controlling, the maniacal, the capitalistic, the corrupt, and the fun. Yeah, we were talking about this topic and just briefly before we started recording the podcast, and we agree that there's a lot here. There's a lot to think about. So this might just be a very organic conversation with no particular direction or perspective, just kind of chatting about the role of training centers, especially, you know, with the looming pandemic. What does that mean for training centers? Is this a good thing? Is this, you know, the plague that cleans out all the training centers? And just like, you know, the religious plagues of yore cleaned out all the corrupt individuals. And I don't know. This might be a fresh start for all of us on the other side of this thing. What do you guys think?
Jeez, what a huge topic. Like I said earlier, all three of us have spent a lot of time in training centers, as students, teaching at these things. And for a long time, I went in blindly with like, that's the path. That's the path to knowledge. That's the path to stage time. I never questioned it. I left Los Angeles. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles to go train at the Second City Conservatory in Chicago, which is kind of like going backwards in time. People usually leave the Midwest to one of the coasts. And I was going specifically for a training center because I wanted that training. And I don't regret, I mean, it was a wonderful time, but now I'm older and I just have different thoughts on this stuff and I don't even know where to begin. We kind of start somewhere. Why don't we say hi to Sam? Sam, you're on this podcast.
Yeah.
Sam,
you're yeah. Here with us. I've been here the whole time. I'm going to do the super nerdy thing. And I think we're taking some assumptions into this conversation. I'm going to take those out. So I'm going to define a training center so that we can maybe start there. When we talk about a training center, I think we're generally talking about improv as a thing. There are also like clown training centers as well. Mm. And what would distinguish a training center, I would argue, would be classes coupled with a stage. And I think that's where things get really tricky, actually, for training centers. If you were just taking improv classes with a coach, that's one thing. If you were just booking your own stage to have a show that you're producing, that's another thing. But when you sort of create this entity that both teaches a performance and then uses that as a pipeline to the stage, I think that's when we get into a lot of the really tricky aspects of a training center, which is like, are they making most of their money off of classes? And so then their goal is to pump through students as opposed to teaching them. Is it a older organization that now has become an institution and has a lot of politics and maybe like covers up abuse in the same way that institutions do that? I think it's really interesting to think of what the alternatives are to a training center, because I didn't actually go through the UCB training center. I had a coach who was trained in UCB and I had a group of friends and we met every week at her apartment for like 2.5 years. And I feel like that was the best training I ever got. And my one complaint is that I didn't spend a lot of time at a training center going through their program, because they want you to get through the 8 weeks, then go on to the next 8 weeks, and then they're going to get the new fresh batch in. So this is a complicated topic. It's maybe one that's a little going to be different after the pandemic, but maybe that's a place we can start.
Yeah, we can start with all 30 of those different points.
That's okay, great.
Well, I will say that a few years ago, I made it a point to specifically go through every training center in LA and even some in Chicago, just because I really wanted to see what everybody was doing and I didn't want to just judge it based on what other people had told me. So I went through every school that I knew of. Maybe there's one that's not on the internet. But I went through every school that I could find. And my experience with these training centers is that one thing that I think they do well that's really, really nice is particularly I'm thinking about the UCB Inner Sanctum area. And with that, for those of you who don't know or who haven't been to UCB Sunset, the Inner Sanctum area is a part next to part of the same building as the UCB Sunset building where they have classes and shows, but it's also, they have a cafe there and people can just kind of lounge and work on their material. And so what I always appreciated about that was there was always a sense of like creativity in the air. And that was really inspiring to even be around. Even if I didn't care for the content, it was just nice to be around people who were trying to create and collaborate. That was just a nice vibe to have in the room. And so I really appreciated that. And I think what training centers do well is they bring people together. But that's basically where it stops. Because as soon as the people are brought together, then you start having politics within a group, and you start having people trying to vie for status and trying to get in shows and on teams and who knows who. And it starts becoming very clicky once you get actually into these organizations. But I love the idea that a training center can bring people together and collaborate. If there's some way that a training center could be developed that could bring people together to allow this kind of collaboration and for people to share like views and to debate concepts and all these things, basically what we're doing on this podcast, if a training center could help facilitate these conversations and artistry, I think that's great. I think that's training centers at their best. Trying to squeeze poor artists out of their last dollars, you know, to pump them onto a Herald team and then have them pay for the coach and then not pay them money and stuff like that. You know, it's a whole complicated thing once you get past the meeting. But I think if we could just get people to have a space for collaboration within an institution, a training center, perhaps, I think that's a training center at its best. Everything else, fine, thanks. No thanks. I don't know. Like, I have to say, people may hate me for this. I loved when IO closed. I loved it. Even though I enjoyed going to the IO shows and I appreciated having a place to go on like a Thursday night for like $5, you can get in all night. That was a lot. That was great. But what I loved about IO closing is that now all of these different teachers and coaches who were working and performing there didn't have the institutional guidelines. They didn't have to teach the IO format. And so what I got to do is I got to take classes with Jason Schatz and Greg Hess and Chris Alvarado. And now everyone's teaching me their own perspective, which is great because then I got really what people are teaching and how they really perform, not towing the IO West teaching line. And so I loved when all these coaches and teachers had nowhere to go, then they could really be themselves. And then I got some real information. I didn't just get the bullshit that they're trying to sell me for $450 a class. So I loved when IO closed.
This is like a Disney cartoon villain who's like, ah, oh, wasn't it great when all those people became unemployed?
Wow. I mean, I think it bettered the art form, I should say. And I like the expansion and the enrichment of the art form. So I think that's what was great about IO closing. And so I look forward to when UCB closes and when Impro closes and all these teachers are just at my fingertips to hire for $20 an hour. That's my dream. It's my dream. And I'm not going to be shy about that. I really love it.
Wow. 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 Because it's crazy to hear. I hear what you're saying about having all these teachers and coaches available now. I feel like they always were. I feel like they were teaching at the training center and then also with coach on the side. So I think they were available. And I hated when IO closed, IOS closed. That was my home. For better and for worse. I mean, that's kind of like a family, right? Like there's good and bad. But like you mentioned earlier, I think the best part of a training center is the community. And IO gave me a real community. I liked my classes. I mean, maybe I'm naive in that sense. I guess I can look back and see maybe where there are problems here or there. But generally as a whole, I loved training. I loved learning improvisation from these people. I had great teachers in Chicago and in LA. So it was always a positive experience. Now, of course, politics and like teams, that kind of fucks with things. And I didn't get on all the teams I wanted to, but then eventually I did. And then you go, hey, I like politics. when I'm on a team that I enjoy, it feels good. But community is huge in the training center, right? Like like that's where the I don't know, it's where the ideas come in and the conversations at the bar and stuff. That's just so important to me. And I think West Side Comedy Theater does a really good job with that in Santa Monica. Well, I don't need to say that every time. Because I think over there, you're dealing with people that don't want to do comedy or perform for a living. So it's just people who are enjoying learning this art form and playing with it, as opposed to maybe UCB or IO, where it's a little more showcase oriented, where sometimes before a show, they're like, so-and-so is in the audience. And that kind of like fucks with your performance and stuff. Anyway, I guess that's not training center specific, except that people might, you know, people in charge might go to those places to scout. And that's when it felt a little crazy. I don't know. I'm going all over the place because I know that there's a lot of bad stuff in training centers. And I'm counting on you guys to tell me what they are.
I mean, to be fair and frank, I think that you hit IO West at a different time than I hit IO West. And I'll say RIP because I really did enjoy that bar. And I made a lot of friends while I was going there. But the view from a student who started at the training center in its last 2 years, I don't think I ever really thought I would make a main stage house team. Like, I really didn't think it would be very possible. I didn't even sort of make like the back Del Close theater teams. I had like a couple of people in my classes and kind of be like, oh yeah, like she's an actual actress. Like she's been acting for the last 10 years. Now she's just doing improv, or like, oh, that person's like pretty naturally kind of funny. Like I could see how they're going to go up there. But the view from the bottom at these training centers is sort of like, what are you promising me and what do I actually think I'm going to get out of this, if that makes sense?
I think that's a great point. It's because I hear people talk about like, oh, UCB in New York when they were just starting out, you know, it's like, oh, there was a vibe that everyone, it was like collaboration. You were working with Amy Poehler and Matt Besser and, you know, it felt like it was on an upswing. I guess maybe because, yeah, I didn't start really going to training centers till maybe 2015, 16. So well after they were established. And maybe training centers are at their best when they're up and coming, you know, when they're building and developing and there really is a sense of collaboration rather than, okay, now it's calcified. We have our top 10 performers. They're going to be our teachers. They're going to be on the main stage. There might be some wiggle room. People might come and go a little bit, but this is the thing. And it doesn't really change after that. And I think that's when maybe it gets stale and political and uninspiring. It turns more into a factory than a collaborative. So maybe IO is the same way because IO has been around since what, the 70s, whatever it was. So, you know, it's peaked its ascension. You know, it was building. They were trying to find it. They think they found it and then they locked in. And that's when it became a factory, you know, a little bit more.
But think about the ebb and flow of popularity between certain training centers and what that says or what that means. Like, if we're saying a particular training center has become calcified, it still, in some cases, still didn't make that any less popular. You know what I mean? Which I think is interesting. Like, it wasn't like it was a known thing. Like, oh, this place has kind of reached its peak. Let's go. Except in the fact where certain training centers in certain decades will pop. And that seems to be like where the hot talent is coming from, or I should say people are getting recruited from those places. So then, you know, IOS certainly took a backseat to UCB LA once it started to like come up, and then all of a sudden anybody on your favorite NBC sitcom, you could go see them on a Herald team over there. That's interesting too, where then these kids are coming out of college or even still in college and going to go, where do I want to train? Well, that place is popular because like it's in popular culture. People know that. And like, there's a certain hipness to that. I think that's interesting too. The way we decide on where to go. Cause there's the one actor who's like, I train everywhere. I'm a lifelong student. And I like to get all different perspectives. And then there's the ones who are like, look, I'm trying to get on fucking Superstore, dog. You know what I mean? Like, and I know that so-and-so casting directors go to this theater and not that theater. So I'm training there. That's interesting too.
I was really happy that I liked the IO West class that I took. I had taken a UCB class in like 2008. So, I mean, very early UCB, but I didn't really like acting. I would sort of say UCB is maybe not the best place to start just because they're so specific in how they want things to be done. So like I was getting a lot of notes in class that I really didn't even understand what the teacher was getting at until like years into my improv experience. And there was something actually that was really nice about iOS not being the super sceney place, because like UCB, it just sort of felt like you had to sign up for classes within like 5 minutes of them being announced. Like I couldn't even sign up for half of the classes. And then like there's this whole culture that kind of surrounds what all that becomes. But then at the same time, like I loved iOS because I could get in to see the shows at Thursday night without like having to get a ticket online or anything, because there were a lot of empty seats. And I think there were a lot of empty seats because, and I loved a lot of the performers there, but a lot of them have been doing that show for a while. And so they didn't have an audience to bring out. New people weren't being brought up, so they couldn't bring in their sort of new people. But also, I think so many of these training centers are a boom and bust thing, right? Like it is that sort of startup, and then it sort of becomes a longer term thing, but it's not as popular. I don't know. It was so interesting hearing you say like, yeah, every decade there's a different training center that sort of booms. You're right. But that's like, it has its decade and then it's kind of done.
But that's kind of what I think I'm saying. I think for me, I think I'm right on this. I think that training centers are on when they have their ascending, when they're ascending, when they're building, that's when they are interesting, inspiring. People can feel like they can have a piece of it. They can be a part of this collaboration. They're not just taking classes at a faceless university, you know? And I think maybe that's why, you know, IO and maybe then Second City and then UCB, it's like, because when they're on the ascension, they're aspiring. There's a story. There's, you know, there's something there that people can really emotionally connect with. And then after, you know, they get their people and their curriculum locked in and they start making you buy a $25 book in your first class to might, you know, squeeze you out of extra money, and you can start seeing the capitalism. And I'm not anti-capitalist, but you can start seeing the capitalism and the marketing behind it. Then it turns to be less about the artistry and the collaboration and the art form, and more about, you know, playing the political game, spending your money, you know, those kinds of things. And so I think when they're on the ascension, that's when they're inspiring. That's when they have their boom. And then once they've peaked, then people see them for what they are. They're just a money-making organization, and the artistry kind of comes second.
I don't know if people, I mean, whether or not people see them for what they are, they still exist. Like you're acting like people see them for what they are and then they lose popularity.
I think they do. Like, that's why they're having financial troubles and having to close and downsize, is because that happens. That might not happen overnight, but they start to decline.
Huh. That's interesting. Maybe you're right. I just don't remember at least personally, ever having the thought in my head, like that place is becoming too popular. Not for me. No, if it was, the more popular it was, the more I wanted to be a part of it. You know, I went to Second City in 2006. That place was established in like 1957. There was no ascension for me. There's no getting in on the creative ground floor there. But I liked it because it was an institution, because I thought that's where the best of the best would train. You know, that's what I thought. And, you know, you learn that might not always be the case. I guess I just don't see the fall. I just don't see the rise in popularity coinciding with the lack of interest to participate in a place. I see them going together. It seems like when UCB was at its most popular after this underground ascension, is when you saw the most UCB hoodies surrounding Franklin Village. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I don't know. That's
well, I mean, I don't know. I don't have any empirical evidence for these things. This is just my personal observations and understanding of the history of improv. Totally may be wrong, but because, you know, it doesn't rise and then immediately begin to fall. It has a wave of popularity, and then it's like, oh, okay, there's nothing new here. There's nothing building. Oh, okay, well, I still want to be part of this art form. I have to go somewhere else if I want to experiment with something outside the Herald or whatever, you know, because that's why I think ideally a training center, it's about collaboration, bringing people together and, you know, trying to have an ongoing conversation maybe about the art form, as opposed to a lot of training centers feel like they calcify their curriculum, their perspective, their tone. And maybe that's out of necessity. Maybe that's out of branding. You know, how do you brand a training center if you don't have a specific thing? You know, but I think that specific thing is actually what kills the training center in the long run, because what it may be interesting for some, and it may have some audience for that thing, I think it wanes. You know, I don't know.
You know, our perspectives are a little skewed by just our experiences. We haven't talked about Groundlings, which, as far as like LA training centers goes, we've talked about it a little bit, but just in thinking about this, I don't know if this is true for Groundlings, because I haven't gone to a ton of shows there, but when I do, they're pretty packed. People still want to go there because it sort of has a reputation of being competitive and producing good performers. And I'm curious where maybe they're doing something right. But also, you know, like UCB is such an interesting example because they expanded so quickly. I feel like Groundlings has kind of been where it's been for the last 30, 40 years. I don't know.
I think Groundlings, one thing from my perspective, because I did also study there, that they do, maybe this is, they do well, but what they do is they don't just pass people to take your money. They will ask people to leave the theater if they're not doing well enough in their training program. They don't just keep funneling you through. And so there's a lot of integrity when it comes to who makes it to the main stage, who doesn't. And maybe that's not always fair. Maybe there are still some politics that go on. I'm sure that's the case as well. It's not just completely merit-based, but it's at least much more focused on the quality of the performance rather than, hey, let's get you through the 5 training levels and then, you know, good luck to you on Herald auditions.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you, Jamie. Yeah, I feel like that's the number one complaint about training center, because the way you said it there sounds nice, but I think people get upset with like a specific teacher's view of them, and that's what's keeping me back. So teacher X didn't like my characters in this particular class. No, I don't get to go on, or a student next to me who I didn't think was as good, that sounds, you know, got to go on. So yeah, that doesn't, I always hear people complain about that one the most. And yet, like you're saying, Sam, and so are you, Jamie, like, but then they are known for having the consistently good shows, big shows. That's interesting. But I think if you polled, I'm just making this up, if you polled 100 people that took classes at Groundlings and then polled 100 people that took class at the West Side Comedy Theater, I feel like the people at the West Side would have a more positive overview of their experience. Though West Side is not even kind of competitive. You still have to audition to get on a team, but for the most part, it's more community-based and not performance-based at that training center. Do you know what I mean? I feel like people have I don't know.
I think you're right. I think with all these conversations, it depends, why are you going to the training center?
Right.
You know, are you that competitive person who wants to beat everybody and be the team captain of the whatever, or are you just there for a fun time after your accounting job on the weekends, you know? So a lot of it depends just on why are you there in the first place. But I agree. The problem with training centers in general is that they kind of funnel you into a certain type of performance. They don't acknowledge or value things that fall outside of what they're looking for. Like if you're going to UCB and you're trying to play that game, if you come in with a very meta thing that undercuts the entire scene, they don't see the value in that because they have their goggles on of, oh, that's not, you're not playing game. Even if that was a very fun, cool move and something's there. I don't know. I feel like that's something I've struggled with a lot at all these training centers is I want people, you know, a training center to help me be a better performer in my style. I want them to help me cultivate my own perspective and voice. And some of that's them teaching me things that I never thought about, but some of it is, oh, my objective is to do a very meta improv scene where I undercut it, but also we build at the same time. Oh, don't, this isn't the theater for you is usually the answer. You know, or you're doing it wrong, or do it our way kind of thing. And so there just seems like very little room for originality, which of course is, you know, my byline on every episode. But I don't know. Sam, what do you think about all this?
I'm going to blow up training centers. Okay. We're doing a complete pandemic reset. All right.
Fun.
We've also been given $500 million. So we can do whatever we want. And our options are every kind of way of teaching someone to perform, specifically the comedy, let's say. And like some of the examples of what people have done in the past would be things like, we're going to have 5 levels. Each level will take 12 weeks. You will move through those levels. When you graduate, you can audition for teams that we'll have on our stage. We get students by using our audience and telling them to come to our classes. That seems to be like the traditional Los Angeles training center in a lot of ways. Jamie, you're part of a group, Improv for the People, which goes a little bit differently in my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong, is it's more sort of like subscription. We have 2 levels, advanced and beginner. You can come for as long as you want to come. To me, that's a little bit more of like the martial arts kind of style, which is like, keep coming. We'll give you the next level when you're ready for the next level kind of a thing. And then I guess there's also maybe like thinking of more traditional schools where, you know, what would an actor conservatory actually look like? Chris, you might know that better than I do, but, you know, there are like MFAs in sort of clown performance. Like what would that kind of a school look like? So I'm giving you guys the money and the hypothetical. How would you reimagine the training center experience?
It's difficult because the temptation is to do what you know, which a lot of how training centers are structured, from my perspective, look a lot like how, you know, schools and normal non-performing universities are structured. Different levels, you pass the class, you move on, you graduate, and then once you graduate, then you have the opportunity to work or whatever your program is. But to me, in my experience, is that college doesn't prepare you for work. And that's what I fear with training centers, is that they're squeezing you for money. They talk the talk, but they don't actually help you. You graduate the 5 tiers of UCB. You're not ready the next day to get on a stage and do a Herald. You're just not. You're not. You need that practical experience. And so I would de-emphasize the, you know, going through the ranks and taking these classes and see if there's a more like you learn on your feet kind of way. You know, maybe your first class is your first performance kind of thing. And I don't know. As far as I know, that kind of thing hasn't been done. But to me, having gone through normal university and then gone through comedy schools, is that they have the same problem, is that the theory is not enough. You know, you need to put it on its feet. And so why not just start with putting on its feet, you know, and you can pick up the theory along the way. Something like that might be a little bit more interesting to me, where every class is a show. Maybe it's a live directed show, but every class is a show, right? I don't know. There's something interesting to me about that.
Oh, geez Louise. I think I've taught at a lot of places and I've seen the different reasons why people take classes, and it's so varied. It's so varied. Some people take an improv class, like Jamie mentioned, yeah, as like a hobby after work, but others take it for like communication skills and public speaking skills and stuff like that. So I feel like I'd want to do a gigantic orientation in a big auditorium. And you go through a series of little scenes or exercises to find out what sparks you, what gets you going. And then you could come over to the Chris Alvarado Dramatic Improvisation, which is where I've landed with my own workshops. This, like, talk about, you know, starting your own training center. I don't have that, obviously, but I do have my own workshop series, which has become pretty much just dramatic improvisation. And some people come and they leave. Nah, that wasn't really for me, but some people stay and they really love it, love it, love it, love it. And maybe next year, maybe they will have had too many improv tears cried in my workshops and they want to do whatever, clown or something more physical and stuff. So do you know where I'm getting it? So it's like, come to this big thing, this orientation, there's all these tables.
It's a career fair.
It's a career fair. And also, you know, you want to go do drama improv with Chris Alvarado, then maybe in 8 weeks you're done, or you're done with that. You want to move over to the Trickster series with Jamie Parkinen. Something like that. Or also, the table for the people that, right, that are shy and want to get out of their shells. You hear that a lot. Oh, you know, I teach it in Santa Monica. It's a lot of tech people, you know, young professionals. I want to get out of my shell, these public speaking skills. That person shouldn't be on stage with somebody who's trying to put together an SNL reel. It doesn't make any fucking sense. And then as a teacher, I have such a hard time because I want to encourage the SNL character-y guy, and also, but also like encourage the person who's just trying to like say sentences in public and then try to like get them to mesh. That feels like shit almost all the time. I mean, sometimes there's some beautiful moments, but that's just difficult as an instructor. That's hard. And I want to say this. So that's, I guess that's my version. I want to say, Jamie, because you've said it a couple of times, I never, and it's, I know I'm naive. I never felt the taking your money type stuff from training centers. Like I never really felt that. I never felt bad. I was always excited to take a class. I was always excited to pay for it. I will say a lot of that is me, and I've said this, it's me being naive. Maybe because I thought this was like the road to success, you know? So I was always like enthusiastic to pay for these classes and to show up. It never felt like a business. That's because I'm an idiot, perhaps. Because I know it is a business. I know. Also, I'm 41 now. I was taking training when I was 19. So you're different, right? There's a lot of time where you can kind of see, oh, it is a business and what this means. But when I was there, I didn't feel like a consumer. I mean, I know I'm a, I didn't feel like, I felt, and I love my teammates and some of the people. Everyone has a story that they're still friends with somebody they took the first improv class with. You know, that's important. Anyway, that's a lot.
I know. I guess. You know, and the money doesn't always offend me. I'm always happy to pay to support the arts in general. So that part doesn't bother me. I think artists should be paid and teachers and performers should be paid. So the paying isn't the problem. But the problem to me is that a UCB class costs $450 for 8 weeks. And when I sign up for Jason Schatz's 4-week class, it costs $180. That's the problem, is I see that differential and I see, where is this 200 something difference going? You know, and I'm not a fan of that because it's already expensive and hard to do. You know, maybe Jason Schatz, I hope he doesn't mind me name dropping him, could charge more, you know, but maybe, I don't know. I don't know how he comes up with his prices or how UCB comes up with their prices, but I see that price differential and I'm a little bothered by it. It feels disingenuous. There feels like, this doesn't feel good to me. That kind of difference doesn't feel good to me because I'm not getting more than twice the value with a UCB class than I am with a Jason Schatz class qualitatively. You know, maybe I'm in the pipeline so then I can be on a Herald team, but then you're paying to be on a Herald team, which you might never, ever be a part of. So that feels also disingenuous.
I know. And you're right. But it's also, you're right. But then the Herald team, right, could lead to that, you getting on that Herald, to that person coming to that show, to picking you up. And there's more of an opportunity of you getting on that show or getting a job as a writer on a show on a UCB stage than there is in a small little rented classroom of Jason Schatz. But I mean, I hear you.
That's true. But then that's kind of gross to me. It's like, oh, I'm paying this theater to let them let me be seen on their, you know, on their stage, which they're not even letting me do, really, because I have to audition and make it and then have the politics to back up the money that I just spent. And that's a whole thing. And that's why training centers bother me. And that's why I like when teachers go their own way, because I feel like you get more for your money and you get genuine artistry behind it. It's for the love of it rather than, you know, hey, go make that SNL reel after class kind of thing.
But we brought this up before though, where like you don't really have the career aspirations in the arts necessarily. I mean, I know if you had the chance, you would tour the world with Sam and make a living that way. But for a lot of people, this is their, so yeah, no matter how satisfying it is to take that class with Schatz, who's a great person and a great teacher, and I love his style. If I'm young, if I'm a young dude, like maybe like I don't have time for the art stuff right now. I got to do more of the commercial stuff. And the commercial stuff says, if I take this class, you know, on resumes, even your agent, this is a very popular thing that you hear a lot, especially in level one classes. Oh, my agent told me I should take an improv class, you know, especially UCB. Because you get UCB on your resume, that's supposed to show some kind of standard, some kind of quality standard. And that might be worth paying for. You know, where the name Jason Schatz might not mean something to a casting director, but UCB would. There is something there, I think. I mean, gross or not, I think there's something valid there.
I think you're right that it is because I got that advice as a writer, right? Take an improv class. It's something that has helped a lot of other people who have had career success that way. But I'm a little struck by the idea of actually learning versus the ability to get exposure, because I think that's an interesting like disconnect that we're talking about a little bit. It's funny with the pandemic and also TikTok in general, I don't feel like, and maybe this is one of the reasons why they're busting a little bit, improv schools aren't the talent farm that they were 15 or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So now if I can just be really funny and make a video, which challenge of my lifetime, guys. I don't know. It's so interesting to hear you sort of talk about this, Chris, because I think that was, especially in Los Angeles, a huge driver for a long time. Was you would hear about people who made, you know, main stage UCB teams, and they would get like agents calling them because like they were starting to like scout that way. But you used to have agents going to like the improv, you know, stand up comedy plays, and like that's kind of still true, but probably not as common as it used to be.
You're right.
So there's maybe a lot going on with sort of like how we find comedy talent that kind of gets jumbled up into all this.
I think you're right, Sam. I think that even you just saying that out, like just for me to hear it, there is less of a need for that stuff now. It almost sounds like old timey, even though it wasn't that long ago, for an agent to come. It's like the old, like getting discovered in a grocery store, right? Like it almost sounds as, but I'm old enough now to have been around where people were getting discovered on an improv stage, though that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. And then back to Jamie. So then I like Jamie's, it's like, well, if that's not happening anyway, let's go take classes with the people who we love and do the work we want to do. You know?
Right. I'm sure, you know, the Jason Schatz are all, you know, the individual coaches make more money when we take their classes directly. They can control the content. They can control it within their own schedule. But like, I feel like it's like that Wizard of Oz moment where we peer behind the veil and we see the guy on the bicycle. You know, it's like, oh, now that we have TikTok and YouTube and improv theaters are declining, it's like, oh, well, what were they really there for? Just to put people, just to expose people? That's what we were paying all this money for, is for their exposure. And it's like, well, okay, now we've seen the little man on his wheel. And now it's like, oh, now they're declining because we have TikTok. You know, so it's like, what were they really there for in the first place? It's kind of, you know, it's like any kind of corporation. They have the corporate rhetoric about, oh, community and we listen and diversity and value all this stuff. And then they have what's really going on is they're trying to make money off of, you know, having Amy Poehler be on Parks and Rec, you know, and then trying to sell that for the next 10 years to a bunch of people who hope that they can also get on a sitcom. You know, that's gross to me.
I agree. I 100% agree. I guess that I was just one of the people that bought into that. I don't think
that's wrong, though. I think 15 years ago, that's like 100%. Look, people used to go to film school because the only way that you could watch old movies was by having a place that had a library. Like before VHS tapes, some plays had to like own the old film rules. And those happened to be film schools, right? So like that was the only way that you could watch all these classics and like really study them, or like get to use some of that equipment because it was really expensive. I think like 20 years ago, it wasn't super easy to get a stage in Los Angeles. And it probably wasn't like super easy for you to get a group of people together for enough money to do that. So maybe it's a thing of its time. And maybe we're sort of saying like we're moving beyond the point where people have to see you in person first. That could be part of it, too, is that we're just kind of evolving beyond a little bit, too, is like improv is a team sport. Like you don't have training centers for stand up. Right. You don't really have the same dynamic. You disagree?
There are training centers for stand up.
There are classes for stand up and they have like a class show. But I would not say that there are training centers unless I'm really wrong, which is possible.
Well, I won't debate the point because I think you had a very specific definition of training center. But I don't want to interrupt your point because you're on a roll.
No, I'm done rolling. I'm actually kind of curious. Like, would you redefine training center and say like, I think X stand-up comedy school counts for that?
I'm not super in the stand-up world, so I don't know the ins and outs the way I feel like I do of clown and improv. But Yeah, I mean, I think there are training-ish centers. The thing is they're not teams, and so there's not really like auditions to have like a weekly Friday night slot. And so it's structured a little differently, but I think there's training centers for stand-up. You know, it's not just a bunch of individual stand-up comedians teaching their stand-up classes. They have organizations that have like a curriculum and whatever. Is that different? I don't know. But yeah, Sam, I think you might be right that I think that maybe, you know, improv theaters did serve that purpose for a while to expose, and that was how people made it. And I think people did make it that way, you know, but I just don't like that they're not honest about that. Like, if you're going to sell me exposure, I want that to be advertised. You know, like, I want just honesty, I think, with what I'm paying for, rather than giving me the corporate bullshit rhetoric about, oh, it's about community and you're going to learn the Herald. But really what you're selling me is the opportunity to be famous. Like, I would just like them to say that. How fucking cool would that be if like a class description said, hey, and you're going to be on our stage, which is where people go. Like, fuck yeah, great. Then I know what I'm signing up for, rather than, you know, me when I didn't really know improv, everybody has heard of UCB and the improv community in LA. So it's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll start taking classes there because I don't know any better, you know? And then once I know better, I'm like, oh, I see what's really going on here. This was kind of a waste of time and money. you know, and I don't know, training centers are great because they bring people together. And I met a lot of great people in my UCB classes and had a lot of fun with them. So in that sense, training centers, again, I'll say that's their value, is bringing people together and helping people collaborate. But I just, institutions in general feel like they talk out of both sides of their mouth, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm just not interested in that. I just want authenticity and honesty with what I'm being sold.
I think we said this earlier, but why you're showing up is so important. Even the students I teach, okay, here's what I want to say about my own experience in training centers. This doesn't sound crazy. I don't think I actually, besides structure, besides like a learning a form, let's say, I don't think I really learned a lot of useful skills. I'm being honest. Like, people always equate like taking improv classes with being quick-witted or quick on your feet or knowing what to say in an audition or something. Those are synonymous. Commercial auditions and improv training, not synonymous, but people always want those two together. I don't feel, and I'm going to be really like, people are not going to relate with me. I don't feel like I learn anything from my improv that I bring into my auditions. And it's like a wild concept, I think, very controversial thing for me to say, but what? I don't tag out anybody in my audition. I don't do callbacks in my auditions. I don't do an organic opening. Like, the only skills, like, I've had more logged hours talking in front of people than others, maybe. Do you know what I mean? Like making, but like, that's it. And in a commercial audition, when they ask you to riff or improvise, that's like no more than one sentence. A button that could be two more words after the audition. So it's like, you know, the commercial ends with like, we're at a beer. And then they want you to riff. So it's like, we're at a beer. Again? That's my improv training coming into play. Honestly. Like, always, it's like, I would love to improvise an entire play for somebody, a solo one act. That might show the skills I've learned. But my day-to-day, also, people talk about how, like, it's the communication skills. There's a lot of, like, applied improv training out there, like, how to use this in the real world. I've been a part of some of that training. I've taught some of this corporate stuff or some of these, like, I have a lot of social anxiety. I stutter at times. My voice even goes high when I'm nervous. And I've spent more time on stage than most people. I don't really, those skills don't really cross over for me personally, which I know, again, is like not great. So I don't know what a lot of people are getting out of it, to be honest. I think people just say it. It's so easy to say it, Jamie, to be like, you take improv classes, then you're better on your feet. You're better on your feet. You are? I don't know. Because also the training I've taken and have taught put you in your head a lot more, because you're thinking about point of view. Who am I? If this, then what?
That's training center. That's training center bullshit. That's not, because I think the art form of improv and clown have helped me as a human being just chill the fuck out, really. Because you have to be okay with failure and all these kinds of things that are great for me as more of like a perfectionistic controlling personality to kind of just relax and let things go. So that has helped me. But I didn't get that from a training center. I got that from the art form. The training center, it puts more pressure on you. It gives you rules to follow. And if you don't get those rules right, then you get notes for it. And that's maybe that makes you okay with failure, but it also kind of puts you into like a little bit of a pressure cooker of like, here's the right answers, do this or you don't move on. Right. And that's, I don't know. I would like to, in our last however many minutes we have here, talk about maybe if improv centers, improv training centers have, they served a purpose, they put improv on the map, right? Maybe that's what they served a purpose for, is they kind of gave the world this thing to articulate and kind of put it in the pop culture. Great. Then they served their usefulness. They can go away now. Now what's next? As training centers decline or downsize or become these smaller organizations and not these huge factories, you know, where what's the next training center going to look like in the next 10 years? Who's up and coming? What modes, if any? Or is it just going to be the same old, just different packaging? What do you guys think?
Tough question.
It is.
I would lean, if I had to guess, I would say a little bit, it would probably be more like same old than not. Just because a lot of people have made a lot of money and they have experience working that way. And so I think for some of those reasons, it'll maybe come back. What I would like to see, my dream kind of a thing, would be to see less classes and training centers and more cooperatives and theater producers. Because I think there's an opportunity for people who can get together and want to work together. I think one of the ills of training centers is like, sometimes you're taking a class with a bunch of random people and they're like, make a practice group. Well, these are a bunch of random people who are also at my skill level. So now we're going to be a team together, but like, I don't really like that person. They don't really think I'm funny. None of us agree on what we actually want to do together. So we're going to compromise and do something none of us are really excited about, as opposed to like, yeah, we've been working on a theater production for the last year and a half. You know, we're rehearsing improv with a director who's very skilled and a master of the form. And like, yeah, we're gonna have like a 4-week show next summer. We're not ready yet. I will talk about this till the day I die. The UCB training I got, where we did 2.5 years of classes and only did shows twice, I learned more in there than I ever learned from just doing random shows. So I would like to see people find a way to train with people they like and build productions.
That's really interesting. My initial impression is that I really like that. And that's kind of what you and I try to do, Sam, you know, to the extent we actually have our fingers in too many different productions.
War and Peace is coming.
To the listeners, we've been planning a War and Peace, maybe fringe show or some kind of 4 or 6 week run with a War and Peace clown type show. And well, the pandemic came along, so we at least got pushed back a little bit, but, so we actually have an excuse for that, but I think we just have so many projects. Chris, you look pensive in your little square down there. What's next? Do you think training centers will kind of just still exist in their form as they do now? Or do we have something after the pandemic that'll look a little bit more, I don't know, democratic perhaps?
I can't answer it, man. I was trying to come up with an answer. I can't answer it. I don't know.
Well, like, do you have any aspirations to start your own theater, or how would you like to work as somebody who's, you know, a performer and also a director and established coach? You are the kind of person who could, after the pandemic, start something if you had a particular vision to do that. You know, you're in a position for that. What would you want to do?
And I've been thinking about that. Because my weekly workshops, 2 a week, is that bi-weekly or is that?
You know, biweekly is ambiguous. So yes, it is biweekly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
semi-weekly.
Semi-weekly. Has really been so satisfying, Jamie. Just like we said his name 10 times on this podcast, but Jason Schatz, somebody I haven't even taken a class with him, but I admire his play. I admire who he is. And I've always admired that I would be coaching somewhere and I'd see people waiting in the hallway. I'm like, what are you here for? Like, oh, Jason Schatz class. I just fucking love that. And so I've had some success with that during this pandemic through Zoom. And it makes me think of like, yeah, what's next for me? I would like to have like a studio. And I think that that's different than like a training center. Cause I wouldn't want levels. I feel like levels are arbitrary. What? Cause let me tell you, as somebody who's taught the highest levels at whatever training centers, the students who come up through the training centers are never what I consider ready. So I don't want to get into all that, but a studio with different focuses, whenever I'm so inspired to change them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's been really fun about this. It's like we're doing this dramatic improv I keep talking about. But then like music was kind of in my brain recently. And so I'm just doing this music stuff with them. Or now I've been taking like headlines and doing these little like anthology pieces. The one thing that's missing, and I don't know if it's missing. This is in my little rant here, but this is where I'm on the fence, is I've been telling my students, and I believe this, that the performances we're doing during these workshops are enough, meaning it's just not training to do something later. We're doing it now. And you're not learning a tool that hopefully one day you can put in front of people. We are the people. So this is it. And that's been nice. But I can't help but watch every single scene on Zoom and see it on stage and see how it would work, how it wouldn't work, why or why not, and want to give them that opportunity. So that's when I look back to like the training center, because like Sam said at the very beginning, one thing that goes along with training center is the stage. So if I'm a studio where there's classes, you know, we're training or whatever, we're exploring and stuff, I also do want to give them an opportunity, but maybe it's in that same space. I don't know. Maybe instead of class on Thursday, it's bring whoever you want on Thursday and they sit here and watch us. I don't know. I don't think I ever need to go see a Herald again, and that's a big deal for me to say that.
Aren't you on a Herald team?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, or maybe it's like it's not a Herald. I mean I don't need to see an opening in three beats and group game in three beats. I do love improvisation, you know, and I love watching it being performed.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
No, I think Chris, I think there's a lot there. I think we really need to have a podcast based on just teaching and directing improv and maybe different ways to go about that, especially post-pandemic, because I think there's a lot there and we're kind of running out of time on this episode. But with
hey,
that...
Hey, can well, we do that?
No, no. Sorry, Sam. He just lets me shut him down. Sam, what were you going to say? You have the floor.
I know what he was going to say.
I know what he was going to say too.
Yeah. Should we say it for him then, Jamie?
Yeah. At the same time.
Okay.
Because that goes over really well on a Zencaster recorded podcast. When we all speak at the same time, it comes out really nice. 1, 2, 3.
Let's do that episode. Yeah. On we should have that.
Oh, great.
On teaching. Topic. Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Well, on that bombshell, this is the Comedy Fix podcast. You can find us on Instagram at The Comedy Fix. We're always posting different media and keep the conversation going. If you have ideas about what training centers should look like or their value, I would love to be convinced. I'm at Jamie Parkinen on Instagram or Jamie Parkinen on Facebook if you want to reach out and debate me privately. I always welcome that. Where can they find you guys?
I'm at Chris Alvarado on Instagram. And if you are an improviser or somebody who's thinking about improv, and maybe you want to check out one of my workshops, you can go to chris-alvarado.com. There's information there on my workshops. They're even free to watch. I want people to come watch. Just sit in the Zoom room for 10 minutes and see what this is all about. We're doing good work. Thank you.
I didn't know I could watch your classes for free.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I might actually do that.
Yeah.
Jeez, if you two didn't know, I'm doing a bad job letting people know.
Well, Chris doesn't like to self-promote that much. We have to wait till episode 11 or whatever this is to let him speak. Sam, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Samuel S. Miller.
Beautiful. Well, this has been the Comedy Fix podcast, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening.